Hello and welcome to the British Equestrian Podcast. We are back for Female Health February. This is the first of our proper full-length episodes. Hopefully you caught our intro that went out last week with Ash, Anna Louise and Roz. If you didn't, make sure you catch up because it gives you a great overview of the topics that we're going to be talking about over the next month and why we're talking about them as well. But today we are focusing on the female body and some of the changes that it goes through life, with probably a bit of a focus on sort of the younger years as well, because that's when there are a lot of changes happening and a lot of things we need to think about. So we're really lucky in equestrian sport because riding, being around horses, comes without an age limit. We see participants who, you know, very, very tiny in basket saddles, barely able to walk, all the way through to people in their 70s, 80s, still enjoying their time with horses. And that means that a one-size-fits-all approach isn't really the way forward. Different stages of life necessitate a different, a more tailored approach to allow you to get maximum enjoyment of your time in the saddle. And that's not to mention the unique challenges that come with the female body. So hormones, menstrual cycle, physiological changes. There's a lot going on, and we're going to kind of delve into a little bit more of that today. And to do that, I'm joined by three highly experienced practitioners from our National Lottery funded world class programme. First up is Dr. Jo Butt. She is a sports psychologist for the Podium Potential Pathway, working across the disciplines. Welcome, Jo.
Hello, everyone. Nice to be here, Rachel.
Joining us as well is Neil Lewis. He is the programme's strength and conditioning coach, again, working across the disciplines. Welcome, Neil.
Hello, thank you.
And last but by no means least is Christy Wright, and she is the eventing coach mentor for the Podium Potential Pathway and also works with some of the youth athletes as well in British eventing. Welcome, Christy.
Hi there. Thank you for having me.
Welcome, guys. Right, let's get right into it. So first of all, why is it important that we have an idea of some of the sort of mental and physical changes that the female body goes through over the course of a lifetime? Someone want to dive in there?
I'm happy to start this one off, Rachel. I think it will be interesting to hear what Neil then says about, you know, how the body changes. I think what fascinates me, I mean, we all kind of go through, you know, psychosocial kind of cognitive development changes, and that's kind of related to, you know, how our brain develops and matures and different parts of the brain, and it's certainly influenced by situational and contextual factors, you know, throughout our life. I think in terms of women, the female body, what fascinates me is that our psychology and how we think about ourselves can be influenced by the changes, you know, that our body goes through. So even though we're not to confuse development at the same rate, you know, physically and cognitively we develop differently, different rates. But I think when I think about the changes that the female body goes through, not just hormones, but then that can have an influence on self-esteem, identity development, our perceived competence. And I think they're all important in a sporting environment, which obviously lends itself to being competitive, and how social media influences that. So particularly, you know, in the adolescent years, if you've got an early maturing female, then how their body changes. I think we find the research shows that, you know, there might be lower levels of self-esteem there, and the gap on self-esteem broadens, you know, it gets bigger sort of between those ages of 14 and maybe 24. So I think for me, the way the body changes and is perceived can have a bit of an influence on how we view ourselves from a psychological perspective in those areas.
Yeah, just to go on from what Joe was saying there, my caveat is I'm the only non-female on the panel, so I don't intrinsically understand the development of the female body. So that's my get out there on that one. But in terms of the research and all the information that's out there, I think Joe makes a really good point. I don't think you can look at the physical and the cognitive changes in isolation. They're completely and utterly interlinked. So anything you see on a cognitive level or a physical level, there's this back and forth relationship. So just in terms of like the other basics as well, is that it's really important to consider that there's wide ranges going on in terms of development. So you're like when you're young, up until about the age of 9 in boys and girls, sort of isn't huge amounts of change. And then what you've got to consider then is that, for example, if you're looking at things like puberty, the development of breasts and pubic hair, that can happen as young as 7 or 8, but then it can happen as late as 13, 14. And then the same with menstrual cycle and growth spurt, it can start as early as 10 and finish and be even as late as 15, 16. So I think for me, that's the first thing is we need to really, I think it's quite well researched and quite well evidenced as to what the changes are. I think the important thing for me is we really understand that there is a massive bandwidth and range that can happen. So a 10, 11 year old girl and a 14 year old girl physically could virtually be the same. And I think that's really important to consider in terms of how they behave, how they feel, how they interact with the world, how they interact with others, where they are in terms of their hormone profile, etc. So I think it's just really important to consider. It's a very big picture. It isn't just focusing on the one thing. And then I'll leave Christy extrapolate as to how that can affect how you work with them from a coaching point of view.
Yeah, that was going to be where I'm going next. And Neil's basically making me redundant here, which it's great. I'll just sit here and be quiet and listen to you guys.
So I guess I come at it from more of a practical day-to-day point of view. So I work with riders from as young as 9, 10 through Pony Club, all the way up to less ladies in their 70s having lessons. So I see the broad range, and obviously I've been through it myself as a rider and competitor. And I think that you need to have that sensitivity as a coach to be aware that you might be teaching the same person a week later, they might not feel the same. And so therefore, we need to be very aware of how people are dealing with things, how they're coping with things. I see people who can be emotionally very different from one week to the next. And I think I see it at home and in competition. And obviously, when they're in competition, we've then got the additional pressures and stress of competing on top of what they might be feeling it within themselves. So I think as a sport, we need to be mindful and aware mainly, and to try to be there to help people. And, sometimes that's on an emotional support point of view. Sometimes that's on a practical point of view. Obviously, a lot of our competing happens in a field without access to products for girls, and also sometimes they could be in that field for a week. And so I think I'm always quite disappointed, actually, how little support there is in a physical point of view for girls and women as well. So I think right from the word go in Pony Club, I think that we need to be offering support. And even if it's in the type of bra a developing girl wears, as well as being there emotionally for them.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good point. And as you say, there's a lot going on there. And there are, there's some very basic ways that you can support people, even if it is making sure that at the lose at your event, you've got some, some period products and things like that, all the way through to the far more emotional side of things as well, because that is a really key thing. And, the more we talk about these topics, and hopefully that's kind of what we're going to try and get across over the next month or so, is the more we can talk about things, the more we can make them more commonplace and part of everyday life and not have this kind of taboo on them, the more comfortable people are going to feel about opening up and sharing some of what's going on. And that will hopefully make all this, riding, competing, whatever, far easier, because it's a far more open dialogue, open conversation.
I think the other challenge I see with the competition side of it, and when Christy was chatting, it made me sparked my sort of memory of it, is it's the same across many, many sports, and other sports is probably even more prevalent, is this idea of early developers maybe getting access to stuff sooner. So if you're strong, I'm just hypothesizing in the question a little bit. If you're stronger, maybe you get to ride the bigger horses sooner because you've developed quicker. I certainly see it in other sports like football, rugby, and physical sports where people that develop earlier get access to higher level coaching sooner. They get access to more equipment, more facilities, because they catch the eye, so to speak, because they are bigger, stronger, faster. And I'd be interested, is that something that's prevalent in the question as well, Christy, that you get the same age rider, but some are ready to ride a different horse compared to maybe another rider needs to stay with a pony because they're not ready for a bigger horse?
I think it's would be less so, because more normally, although the pony the age for people to ride for the ponies is to 16, you can actually obviously continue to ride them afterwards, but taking part in the pony classes is up to 16. And I think most people do ride the horses that are suitable for them. But there is definitely cases where you've got a rider who has grown too tall for ponies, and sometimes they're still on the ponies. And you can see that with the taller riders, they struggle with their balance on a smaller pony. The problem is when you've got a pony and rider that are competing very well together, it's a very difficult thing to say, actually, now you should be on horses. So I get where you're coming from. I think it happens fairly naturally anyway. And I think it's a horse size or pony size issue as opposed to a strength, because you can have a pony that's under 14.2 that is stronger than a 16.2 horse. So it's not the strength of the horse, really. Although I understand that a stronger rider might be able to ride a stronger horse, but it's more actually the height of them. And that can affect riders as they move, you know, they do the journey from ponies to horses. It's quite a big step for a rider. So although it's a slightly different change from a body change, actually just changing from a horse to a pony is a whole nother challenge they have to go through as well.
And do you find, at this towards you, Joe, do you find that there's the body and the mind maybe don't always work at the same rate or change at the same rate? So maybe, you know, someone is still physically in a child body and the brain is maybe that little bit further ahead, or even vice versa?
Yeah, that's really common physically, and we don't develop at the same rate as our sort of psychosocial aspects. And again, that's just related to how our brain matures in the different parts of it. So it is quite, you know, I mean, generally females do mature more quickly than boys in their sort of brain development, you know, I suppose, as well as, you know, sometimes we see variation in the physical development as well. So there can be mismatches for sure. So one of the areas where we do see that is with sort of how we regulate our emotions and logical thinking. And I guess the thinking part of the brain is the very last part to develop. So there's a bit of a mismatch there with a little bit on how we regulate our emotions. And it's difficult in sport, isn't it? And this isn't just related to the female athlete, but just in general, you know, we're trying to maximize potential, aren't we? We're trying to help that transition process, and we often want athletes, you know, and riders to be wise before their time, so to speak. So we almost sometimes expect them to have the thinking side of things, you know, because we're looking at their physical presence. And there can be mismatches. I'm sure Christy sees this as an important part of her coaching role, but really, really important to be able to help, you know, young riders think about, you know, their emotions, like situations, challenging situations, how they might respond to those situations. Because unless we try to teach for it, it's something that younger riders, you know, will find will find more difficult. So that's why we see, you know, novel situations at certain ages can be challenging. You know, they'll create emotional disturbance, harsh treatment, dealing with an injury, poor decision making. So those things that are related to how we regulate our emotions can be really difficult things for riders to deal with. You know, so we're constantly, I think, trying to help them develop more adaptive ways to sort of regulate their thinking and give them strategies to cope with those types of challenging situations that are going to crop up, you know, through those sort of teenage years. It's a bit of a classic, isn't it? We see people trying to, you know, at that age, we're challenging rules and regulations, but we're also seeking, you know, thrill seeking and trying to be more risk taking. And again, which I think probably has some, you know, could have some dangerous implications for riding when they get to that phase, because, you know, the safety element with the horse not always being under our full control. So yeah, we can see, certainly that's a long answer, isn't it, to your question, but certainly we can see mismatches across kind of a cognitive development with the physical development. But I was just thinking, you know, as Christy was talking earlier, and she mentioned even small things like you know, bra information and breast health is really important and often gets neglected in the work that we do, and I don't think riders or athletes are aware of the implications that they can have on their tissue and the ligaments around the breast, you know, if they don't learn to wear the right size fitting bra. And, you know, little things like that are really important for young female riders and athletes in general. And I feel like what we're trying to do is not just home in on differences, but we're trying to embrace this idea that how can we maximize an environment for a female rider so that we're trying to maximize their development, optimize enjoyment, optimize motivation, because they're the two things that will get, you know, somebody to say, well, I do multiple sports, but now I want to focus on my riding. You know, they're really important factors. And along with female, young female riders, you know, they love social interaction at those ages. So I think it's about providing an environment, isn't it, that works well for developing female athletes and trying to maximize that and embrace it. Rather than just talk about differences all the time, but how can we maximize the environment for them?
Yeah, definitely. Because I mean, that's kind of the key fundamental thing to all of this is that enjoyment. And it doesn't matter what level of the sport you're competing at, whether you are, you know, you're on sort of youth squads and things like that, or I mean, senior squads as well, as, you know, let's face it, we're talking about a whole female landscape here, or, you know, you are just a leisure grassroots rider who, you know, has a pony and or a horse and you know, hack them out and you do bits of schooling or whatever. Like, it doesn't matter what level you're at, you've got to be able to enjoy it to want to keep going with it. And that is, you know, that's hopefully what we're going to help here and, you know, help them do, because you've got to, as you put it, you know, optimize that environment regardless of what that environment is. It's got to work for you.
Yeah, it's making it almost psychologically safe, isn't it, so that people can have those interactions, those important conversations about, you know, needs and how to develop appropriately. And coaches can share information about, you know, those developmentally appropriate, you know, training environments, so that we are thinking about, you know, physical and cognitive development and how that influences, you know, the training environments or the coaching environments that we can create in a positive way.
No, I think that environment point is key. I think we want everyone to enjoy the sport. We want everyone to stay in the sport as long as possible. We want to try and minimize people moving away from the sport. And I always use the example of me trying to learn to play a musical instrument when I was young. I had no interest in it at all. But if you can find something you're interested in and you're passionate about, and then you feel that the environment you have to explore that is enjoyable and safe, and you feel supported in it, you're going to create a passion, and that passion will lead you to sticking with it. I never had a passion for musical instruments, so I didn't stick with it. I had a passion for sport, and that's where I started my career in sport. So I think that's really, really key, is that environment. And if we can do anything we can in terms of education, support structures around it, like you say, all the stuff around the female athlete health is really, really important, then I think we'll develop riders and people that are passionate about the sport and stay in the sport for a long time.
Ian, you wouldn't have been here today if you'd really got into those instruments. You'd have been off in concert somewhere, and I'd have someone else sitting here with me.
It was the classic. It was much more important to my mum for me to learn a musical instrument than me wanting to lose a musical instrument.
I've got this fun picture in my head now of Neil at the orchestra playing musical instruments.
Excellent. Love it. Now, I guess sort of we've talked quite a lot there about the sort of the mental side of things. Now, physically, particularly again, if we're looking at this kind of childhood, teenage years, there's a lot of body changes going on. I guess that's something you have to factor in with training and, you know, sport and movement and all that sort of thing. You must have to be quite sort of careful about what you're putting that changing body through.
So I think from a sorry, Neil.
No, go.
From a practical point of view, I always feel I need to be aware about the young person that's developing, and this is male and female, because they tend to grow quite quickly, but the strength doesn't match the growth. So we end up with, particularly those that are growing quite tall or going to be quite tall, ending up with riders that actually have no or little core strength. And I think this makes quite a big difference to their jumping and to their flat work. And we need to be quite aware that where I might ask them to do something, actually physically they're just not able to do that. So I think that's, for me, that's a young person in general. Those that are shorter generally or not going through those rapid growth spurts cope better with strength keeping up with the growth. And then from a girl's point of view, I think that when they start to develop breasts, they obviously become aware and often end up changing their posture. And if they're not well supported from a bra point of view, again, they won't necessarily sit in the correct place. So I think there's quite a lot that we can do to help them, just making sure that they've got the support. And then helping as they grow, make sure that we gradually introducing the more difficult movements that they, and they cope with them better as they get stronger. So obviously there's things that they can do off the horse as well. But actually even riding, you've just got to be careful that there's only so much they can do. And like young horses, they get tired quicker. They don't have a strength like a grown up would. And it's not just a sort of pulling strength, that's a leg strength, it's a core strength. Even an adult who rides far less has ridden a lot in the past seems to maintain a level of strength that a young person won't necessarily have. So when we're looking at matching young riders and horses, we need to be careful how the pairing goes, because an older rider of similar height can ride a horse doesn't mean to say a younger one will, because they often don't have that strength. And Neil, I imagine you see this all the time.
Yeah, I think one of the key principles I sort of tend to use is let the sport come to them. So what I mean by that is, you're probably, so in girls, you get this peak height velocity at around about 13, 14. That peak height velocity happens about a year later in boys. And what you will see, and again, bear with me, but it's this almost like idea of Bambi on ice, of like, they've got these arms and legs. It's like, where the heck did this come from? Like, oh my God, overnight, everything's just grown inches. And those pathways for neuromuscular control and coordination haven't caught up yet. And probably what you'll see is those athletes, performance-wise, will go backwards for a period of time. And then the real challenge is then in that critical phase when maybe they're not having the success and they're maybe not enjoying it quite so much because they're having not such good performance and not such good training outcomes. They're like, I'm not sure I enjoy this anymore. But it's absolutely nothing to do with their effort or their concentration. It's the fact that their body is changing so quickly, and it's not able to, the neuromuscular system and the chain physical changes that need to happen aren't there yet. So I think that's number one. I always talk about let the sport come to them, or let it come back to them, and maybe just take away the emphasis around outcomes in that sort of period, and just make sure they're enjoying it, because maybe their performance will decrease. The other thing as well is, like it was alluded to there, is you can accelerate that gap by doing some off-horse work to help you get stronger. And I think the real critical thing for me is, I'm not from an equestrian background, I don't ride, but I always, when I ask people in the sport, what is it that we need from our riders, they always come back to this concept of being harmonious and synchronized with the horse. And in that phase of that growth spurt, I would imagine that the horses don't feel like that rider is very synchronized and harmonious with them, because they don't have that stability that Chris is talking about, and that symmetry. And therefore, they're kind of this wobbly, uncoordinated thing on top of the horse that is going to affect the horse's performance as well. So sort of for me, there's two critical things there. Is the patience to let them develop and grow. Two is the off-horse solutions that you can provide. But three, also consider the horse, because the horse will be having to cope with something that is very different to maybe what was coping with 2 or 3 months ago.
Yeah, can I just pick up on something that Neil mentioned there about, you know, reducing outcomes. And again, quite an important part of our work as sports psychologists, I think, is trying to get that balance right, where we're trying to be competitive, because that's an important element of becoming, you know, maximizing your chances of working through the pathway, being more successful. So we don't want to take away competition, but at the same time, we sometimes need to take the emphasis off outcomes. And again, that, you know, it doesn't mean to say that has to be at the expense of finding ways to be competitive, but the outcome aspect of sport in general is important. When we think about how we develop cognitively. So when you think we're around about the ages of 15 to 18, the sources that we use to judge our competence and our ability, you know, they change over time. And around 15, you know, peer comparison becomes a really big part of how teenagers, you know, start to judge their competency. Outcomes, you know, is part of that. And I think we start to see, you know, riders comparing themselves to other riders, what's going on with someone else, what's going on in social media. And again, those things can sometimes have a negative impact. So from my side of it, just picking up on what Neil was saying about outcomes, and, you know, it is a big part of, naturally we become that way, you know, typically around those ages. So I think it's important, you know, for the sports psychologist to be aware of why it's probably happening, and just, you know, being really careful to help the athlete deal with their own kind of performance outcomes, their own performance goals, and not falling into the trap of comparing themselves to what others are doing all the time, which is incredibly difficult at those ages, isn't it? But nevertheless, you know, that along with evaluative feedback, being judged, coaches, etc. So all those things are starting to kick in around those ages, which again, the very nature of sport makes it an important part of certainly my job anyway, as a psychologist.
I think to pick up on something there that I find really critical, and apologies, this isn't necessarily female specific or sport specific. It's in that key stage where their body is changing, they're losing coordination, they're finding the tasks that they were able to do 6 months ago much more challenging because their body is changing so quickly and struggling to keep up. Is this idea of development is that key balance between a little bit of adversity and challenge, but not too much. So if something becomes really easy, you can become disinterested. If it becomes challenging and with a little bit of adversity, I've got to work hard at it, it can be really, really sort of developmental. But then it's that balance then, I think, for the coaches to go, okay, that's a, because of that new body they've got, that challenge is too much. And if I keep pushing that challenge and they keep failing at that challenge, it's going to lead to a lack of persistence and perseverance because they become disillusioned with the sport. So it's really tricky, that phase of trying to find that right balance of, okay, let's take that practice back down a little bit so you can cope with it. And then we'll take it back up in a couple of weeks when you're ready for it. And I think that's a key challenge in this area of for the coaches to understand of how do you manipulate your practices? How do you manipulate your coaching to make sure that the amount of challenge you're giving that developmental female is appropriate to keep them developing, inspired, but not too much so they lose interest and become demotivated.
And I think picking up from that again, from a practical coaching point of view, I think it's being aware of how they are feeling on a day-to-day basis. I've got a teenage daughter, and I know that what she's like on one day is very different from another day. And I try to stay on the ball and, you know, treat her accordingly. And I think it's possibly harder when you only see people with, you know, more sporadically, to be aware of, but also to be aware of how they're coping, as you say, with things like social media and, you know, their involvement in it. They love to put things on there, but knowing that it's not necessarily real life, you know, they'll always put the best jumps on a show jumping round, for instance, but then they look at other people doing the same thing. And then, of course, think that they're perfect. And so it's always remembering, you know, with social, reminding them with social media that they are looking through rose tinted glasses. It's not real life. They don't see all the things that go wrong with horses, you know, are going to happen with horses.
Yeah, some really interesting points from both there. And I could feel myself smiling there as Neil started talking about, you know, finding the balance between challenge and support. And we know that, you know, if somebody says to me, how do we develop, you know, resilience in our riders? And one of the key things we always look at is creating a balance between challenge and support in training environments. And not to get specific into resilience, but it is one of those psychological characteristics that we probably want to try to develop, you know, as we do with confidence and self-determined behavior. You know, we know that there are some psychological factors that can maximize potential, but obviously they need to be nurtured and they need to be afforded the right environment and to almost engender those, to bring them out. So tailoring the training with those psychological factors is quite, you know, how they interact is important. So not to make this about resilience, but what we tend to sometimes see is somebody will say, oh, there's a bit too much challenge going on. And again, if you think about how we're developing, sometimes we're quite sensitive to reward, you know, at certain ages, and then equally we can be quite sensitive to threat as well. And it's when we perceive things as being quite threatening, then we can perceive those to either make us more anxious, which we don't want, or we can try to perceive them as challenging. So, but if we can provide the right support, you know, the confidence building at the same time, then those two ways of training play off each other quite nicely in terms of how we can develop some of those key psychological attributes. What sometimes we see is people say, well, there's too much challenge going on. We need to up the support, but then they reduce the challenge and up the support, or vice versa. And we don't want to take one away at the expense of another. We just want to try and find a way to balance them out in the way that we create the training plans and the coaching plans, etc. So I'm sure Christy's a dab hand at that now. You see it in reality.
Well, I try.
Christy, what's the kind of numbers you would coach in one at one time?
Do you mean as in a
class?
In a class. anything from 1 to 5, although I'd rarely do 5. But with the lower age ranges, you tend to have more in a group, particularly if it's things like Pony Club. As they go higher up the ladder, they tend to become more and more tailored for the individual riders. So you're teaching less per group.
The reason I asked the question, I think a question is more fortunate than other sports in that how you can specifically adapt the appropriate challenge. So, for example, if I go to my local football academy this evening and watch the under 14 girls, there's 15 or 16 of them, and they're all in completely different developmental stages. And yet somehow the coach needs to find an appropriate amount of challenge for 16 girls in completely different times in their development. And I think that's almost impossible. If I'm really honest, because some are going to have find the practice too easy, some are going to find the practice absolutely spot on, and others are going to find it too hard. And I think that's where a question compared to some other sports is more fortunate, because the coaching is lower numbers, and therefore it gives you the better opportunity to specifically adapt that challenge.
And also, I think another difference is that the challenges are going to be not just the athlete. You've obviously got the horse's involvement. So if I'm choosing when I put together a clinic or a group, it, you know, normally it's done on what height the horses are comfortable jumping. So if that works, and then from there you can then change the challenges through the actual session. You can't do that if you've got people of very different abilities within a group. So I would always try and have the riders and the horses jumping roughly the same, and then I can tweak things in there. Or if you've got somebody who you know has not been challenged enough, at the end I'll let them go round again and jump a bit bigger. If you've got somebody who's struggling, I might put them down a little bit. So I wouldn't normally get stuck with not being able to coach a number together and still being able to offer the what I hope is the right amount of challenge and support.
Rachel, can I beat the drum on something that I'm very passionate about?
You may.
So it's this idea of early specialization and fundamental movement. A question, like many other sports, there is this tendency to specialize early. And the trouble with the demands of specialising early is you don't have a lot of time and opportunity to explore other sports. And when I talk about fundamental movement, I think of this idea of developing a bandwidth of movement ability. So you can do different types of movements across that bandwidth because you've explored other sport. So you've been to you've tried athletics, you've tried swimming, you've tried football, you've tried tennis, you've tried lots of other sports. And I see it a lot in other sports, like, again, referring to a football academy. They do pre-academy now, so they start at 9. They're doing 3 or 4 nights training a week. And they play games, and there's absolutely zero time in their schedule to explore other sports. And I think even in football, my one challenge to them would, are you developing true fundamental movement bandwidth? Because all you do is play football, because there's no time to do anything else. They're in school. And that's the other sort of challenge for me with the question is, when I speak to riders, I ask them about their backgrounds. Some do play some sport in school. Some of our top riders played other sports to a decent level. And I can see that when I physically profile them. So one of my beating the drum message would be, is please, 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 if you're a young female rider, please explore playing other sports as you develop through your question, because it will help you in the sport.
Yeah, and I guess, and as you say, that's going to apply throughout the lifetime, is it? Because, you know, that whatever you can do outside of the saddle to, as you say, improve your bandwidth of movement skills, your strength, your condition, all that kind of thing, the more you can do outside of the saddle, it's going to benefit you in the saddle, because you're going to be more balanced, more centered, more, as we've got already said, harmonious with the horse. There's plenty of stuff you can do, and you know, Neil is definitely the expert on this, not me, but there's plenty you can do physically to improve your performance in the saddle, again, regardless of what level you're competing at, but you do that outside of the saddle as well.
Yeah, so for example, I can get a rider who has very little fundamental movement, has done very little other sport. I find a physical deficiency which is limiting their ability to ride. I then try and give them exercises to correct it, and they're looking at me like I'm an alien. And I'm like, well, hang on, can you not do a squat? Can you not do a lunge? Can you not skip? Can you not move sideways? And they're looking at me going, well, no, my movement bandwidth is sitting in a saddle. And for me, I think if we're not at least encouraging that, what I find is at a later stage when they have to do something outside of that bandwidth, and it can be subtle as a change of horse, it can be recovery from injury, anything that fits outside that bandwidth, they can't cope with it. And therefore, if you at a young female age were developing those fundamental movements, just enjoying a hockey or enjoying tennis, enjoying something else, you're developing that spectrum. And then when you want to tap into it at any stage later on, you've got those neurological pathways and programs which are there. They might be dormant for a little bit, but they are there because you've laid them down in that critical phase of adolescence. So when you need to, I don't know, God forbid, have an injury in eventing, and you need to do your rehab exercises as part of getting back to being a synchronized, harmonious, symmetrical athlete to work with your horse, it's quicker and easier for you to recover because they're there. Whereas if you haven't got that, it's like you're having to learn completely from scratch at the age of 18, 19, 20, because you never did it between the ages of 11 to 15. So I'm very passionate about that. And I subjectively, I see it getting worse, this concept of early specialization. It drives me a little bit up the wall, if I'm honest.
It is, Neil. You're certainly banging the drum. I tend to agree with you. I mean, actually, it's one of the most common questions I get from parents across all sports. You know, is it time for my daughter to give up playing tennis now? Is it time for them to stop swimming? And the pressures are so great now. The push to think that you might be getting behind, you know, if you don't have early specialization, and the pressures that are put on, you know, are happening now at younger and younger ages. So you're right, I think we're seeing it more and more, but certainly doesn't always make it right for all those reasons that you were just saying. And I'll just throw one more thing in on that is when athletes start specialising at younger ages, we need to remember that, you know, identity is developing cognitively, you know, as young as 12, certainly I think around the ages of 14. So if an athlete is developing their identity as a rider at that point, you know, they go from someone who says, you know, I like to ride horses to I'm a rider or I'm a show jumper, then identity is formed. And I think the risk of that, whilst we can't really stop it happening naturally, you know, that the risk of that is they don't develop multiple identities, and then we start to see difficulties when they try to engage, or when they can't engage in their sport for some reason, like injury, etc. So the kind of the ramifications, I think, of early specialization, perhaps, you know, go beyond physical capabilities, but can also have an impact on that identity development and what we call sort of identity foreclosure, because it gets very, very focused at earlier and earlier ages.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the key thing I'm getting. Well, I mean, generally from this conversation we're having is that this period of life is when you are laying the foundations for what is to come. And that ties in, you know, with your movement skills, with your identity. But everything we're kind of talking about, it's all about laying the foundation for what is to come, even if it is just as simple as getting that enjoyment in there, building that sporting habit. But, you know, in there now, if you're enjoying it at that age, odds are you're going to keep going into later life, and then you're going to have, I mean, a whole raft of other issues that we've not even touched on today coming with other stages of life development. But, you know, as we said, this is a very important time in everyone's lives, regardless of, you know, whether you're female or not. But, you know, as we've also touched on, there are some uniquely female aspects to this time that can make it a particular challenge, or, in, you know, it, conversely, there are also some benefits as well, which I think we have also touched on there a little bit. Before we wrap up, is there kind of, are there any more sort of nuggets anyone would like to throw in before I wrap this up and bring it to a close?
I think from my point of view, going back to the practical side again, I think education for coaches, understanding what riders, young female riders might need. I think education for organisers, for pony club camp organisers, and actually parents as well, just to make sure that they know that female products need to be made available so that girls can go and help themselves. They perhaps don't even need to ask anybody. Things like wearing dark joppers is a new rule this year, which is allowed in competition, which I think is fantastic. It's not all competition, and but at least it's more available if people are feeling self-conscious. Things like education around period pants, again, which anything that takes pressure off the riders so they can concentrate on their horses and their competing or their riding, I think is really important, because, you know, if they're worrying about the fact they're wearing white breeches and they're trying to go out and compete, and I think it's a whole nother level of worry that they just don't need. And there are things now that make life so much easier, but they will need educating, or parents need educating so that they are available to the young people.
Yeah, definitely. That's a really good point. And again, going back to the education, obviously, we're going to have plenty of assets and things and information going out across this month. And if you have listened to this and you're particularly interested in looking at some of the fundamental movement skills that Neil's mentioned, or the psychological development that Joe's touched on, we do also have some great resources on the website. There's information booklets about both of those that Neil and Joe have been involved in putting together. So make sure you head to our website, check those out, and we will also signpost to them on social media as well. They are really, really interesting. If you've got, you know, spare half an hour, sit down, give them a read, digest, and hopefully that'll help, regardless of whether you're a coach or a parent or just interested in the topic. I did recommend giving them both a read. Right, well, that has been a really, well, hopefully you've enjoyed it as much as I have. Hopefully that's been quite a thought-provoking conversation we've had there. We've touched on quite a few areas on this very interesting period in life, in development, very key, as we've talked about, very, very pivotal to what comes next, which is what we will kind of move into as this month goes forward. So I'd like to thank Neil, Christy and Joe for joining me, for sharing your wisdom. Hopefully you've enjoyed discussing it as well. And yeah, hopefully you at home, you've enjoyed listening, and we will hear from you soon.